The number of women in local jails in the U.S. is almost 14 times what it was in the 1970s. That growth rate surpasses the rate of men, and that makes women the fastest growing incarcerated population in the country. Those numbers come from the latest report by the Vera Institute of Justice. It's a nonprofit research organization that focuses on criminal justice reform. Women in jail face unique challenges, both when they're behind bars and when they leave. And no one knows that better than my next guest. Priscilla Fennell is a former Georgia inmate, now serves as the organizer for Women on the Rise. It's a project from the Racial Justice Action Center in Atlanta. Good morning, Priscilla.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Let's go back to your time behind bars. How did you land there? Why were you there?
Okay. Initially, what happened was I was pulled over for a traffic violation. At that particular time, they implied that my license was suspended. But on my person, I actually had a license that indicated it was still active, and I had no idea as to why it was suspended. Well, to make a long story short, I was carted off to jail. My car was impounded. And I ended up staying in jail for quite a few months prior to going before the judge.
Quite a few. How many is quite a few?
Well, my total incarceration time ended up being like a total of 8 months for this ordeal.
Holy cow. 8 months for a suspended license or
yes. Allegedly suspended license because it became a scenario. I ended up having to go like back and forth to court numerous times. The end result was a hideous fine. By the time they imposed the fines, the restitutions, and the fees, it was about $3,000-something.
Holy cow.
So, of course, I'm a single mother, and I have 6 children. So at that time, all of my children were in school, and my options were based on my pay. Do I provide for my family or pay for the ticket? So I actually was placed on probation, of course. So we know it was a private probation company.
Yeah, we've talked about that quite a bit.
Yes. They feed off of low income.
Right. We've talked about that. So, but and you ended up in jail for 8 months, but you had 6 children at the time.
Yes.
I want to play this comment from Bethany Kotler, founder and program director of the Atlanta nonprofit Motherhood Beyond Bars. And she's talking about new mothers who give birth in prison and have this very short window of time with their newborns before they are moved to another facility. And the babies are supposed to be picked up.
We see a lot of very, very distraught moms when they first get to that new facility. A lot of moms don't get the call that their baby was even picked up until a couple of days later. So they're worrying, you know, did my mom go and pick up my baby? Did the dad of the baby go and pick them up or not? And it's just a lot of worry, a lot of depression, a lot of guilt, of course. And that's what we really try to get them over the hump with our postpartum support group.
So how does that relate to your experience? Not as you didn't have a newborn, but...
Well, just as a mother, I had individual children that were still under the age of 18, even though I had 2 that were over 18. And they knew that I had these children. So the constant harassment of individuals coming to ask me like, well, where are your children? And, you know...
Over a traffic ticket.
Yeah, I got locked up over a traffic ticket. Actually, I paid the majority of it. I believe it was like $230-something. Don't quote me because I don't remember it exactly.
Wait, all that you had left to pay was $200-some?
Yes, and when I went to the probation officer and I explained to her that I couldn't pay that, I was given an option. If you don't pay, you're going to go to jail.
All right. So then, again, you had children
yes.
that someone else obviously had to watch while you were behind bars. Yes.
Yes.
And I want to play another comment from Bethany Kotler, again, from the nonprofit Motherhood Behind Bars. And she's talking here about the visitation process for mothers and their kids.
You're in usually this giant room. It's very noisy. Everybody's visiting together, and children are there with whoever is the caregiver at the time or other family members. So there isn't enough, not very much one-on-one time between moms and their children. Bonding is pretty difficult. Young children can be scared by the process.
What was that like for you? 8 months is a long time for younger kids.
Okay, well, my kids were a bit older, but my fear was that if my children came to see me, that they would be taken by the state because they knew that I was the only parent. So during that time, I didn't get to see my children. And My worry was, because again, like I said, they kept addressing the fact of me having children, that they would go and take my children and put them into the system. And I've heard so many hideous stories about how children are treated when they are in, you know, DFACS custody and Child Protective Services. And my concern was just that they wouldn't get caught up as well.
That happened some time ago. And
yes.
Since you came out, you've dedicated your life to helping other women who might be going through this.
Yes, I dedicated my life then and prior to getting locked up. That was exactly what I was into.
Why?
Because there is a need for us to collectively stick together as women. We live in a society where we're kind of ostracized. And as a Black Latino woman, I kind of see both sides of the fence. Not a lot of programs to assist. If you don't have family who's in a financial situation, normally everybody's struggling from day to day. So the reality is that people don't have a lot of resources. You know, I used to reach out to programs who would take my information, but of course we know that they would use that to continue to get the grant money, because at the end of the day, you don't get return calls, you don't get any of the services that they say that they offer, so you're right back in the same situation that you started. So I felt it was a need for me to do whatever I could on a personal, and now I've been fortunate to be in a position where I do it on a professional level, but I would bring people into my house. Me and my children, we would go out and feed. We would collect clothing, shoes from associates, family, friends, and go out into the community and disperse it, like whatever I could do.
My guest is former Georgia inmate Priscilla Fennell. She's now the organizer for Women on the Rise. It's a project from the Racial Justice Action Center in Atlanta. And I want to bring another voice into this conversation, Elizabeth Swivola. She's a senior program associate at the Vera Institute of Justice, one of the authors of this study. Elizabeth, it's good to have you.
Thanks for having me.
I imagine it comes as a surprise to many people that the population of women behind bars is growing faster than the population of men. Any idea why?
Yeah, so when we set out to do this report, we wanted to answer that question. You know, why are women increasingly ending up in jail? Much of the conversation around mass incarceration has really focused on prison, which holds people who have been sentenced to more than 1 year behind bars. And just recently, there's been more attention on local jails, which hold predominantly people who are pre-trial. So they've been arrested, not yet convicted, and they're awaiting resolution of their case. What we found is that the research is sparse. What does exist is quite old and outdated. But from what we were able to cobble together, it suggests that increasing focus on low-level, nonviolent crimes among the criminal justice system and criminal justice actors has worked to sweep increasing numbers of women into the system.
And one of the things that's written in the report is that the jail system, the American jail system, and again, there's a distinction between jail and prison. So the jail system, you and other authors say, is not designed for women. What does that mean?
That's right. So jails have been designed for the majority of people in them, which is men. Women constitute a much smaller percentage of the people in jail, but again, the fastest growing. So when they get to jail, everything from the amount of toilet paper that is provided to health care, to mental health care, has really been designed for men. And that disadvantages women from the very beginning. And when they leave jail, they are often more traumatized, have greater parental stress, and as Priscilla touched on, even more financially disadvantaged than when they came into jail.
Priscilla, the jail experience itself, would you agree that it's not designed to take care of women well?
Most definitely.
Because you were nodding your head while Elizabeth was talking.
Most definitely not designed.
What does that look like? Give me specifics on what that means.
It's hideous to have a cycle and not have sanitary napkins, to be given undergarments that other people have worn that they tell you that are clean. And when you look at them, you can obviously tell they haven't been cleaned properly. I mean, I have a particular diet because I choose to eat live foods. It was unreal for me. I literally lived off of collecting fruits from other individual inmates because they claimed that they couldn't service that. And the things that they were trying to have me to eat was not in my dietary rules, and I refused to eat them. So then you're deemed like you're a problem. No one should have to go through a system like that. especially because of a lack of income and making a decision. My decision for getting locked up was that I chose to pay the rent.
And you still owed $200 or $300. Elizabeth, there's also in this another staggering statistic is that nearly 90% of women in jails experience sexual violence.
That's right. So yes, 90% have experienced sexual violence over the course of their lifetime, and almost 80% have experienced partner violence. So women are coming to jail with histories of trauma, and then when they're in jail, they're also more likely to be sexually victimized. So even though they're a small
by another inmate or by a law enforcement professional?
Well, particularly by officers. Women were 67% of victims of staff on incarcerated person sexual victimization.
And we only have about 30 seconds before we take a break, but it's surprising that it has grown even faster in rural counties.
That's right. So while overall it's been a 14-fold increase, it has been 31-fold in rural counties. The growth is really happening in small counties.
We're talking about the number of women who are in jail. Again, I want to make the distinction between jail and prison here. And there's one other distinction I want to make, which is that women is the fastest growing population, but men still far outnumber women in prison. It's a little difficult to sift through the statistics there, so I want to make sure that we're totally clear. Right now, I'm speaking with Elizabeth Swavola. She's Senior Program Associate. She's a Senior Program Associate at the Vera Institute of Justice and one of the authors of this study. Thanks for staying with us, Elizabeth.
Thanks so much.
Priscilla Fennell is a former Georgia inmate in a jail who now serves as organizer for Women on the Rise, a project from the Racial Justice Action Center in Atlanta. Good to have you still with us, Priscilla.
Thank you.
And joining the conversation is Sarah Tatanchi. She's the executive director of the Southern Center for Human Rights. Good morning, Sarah.
Thanks for having me.
Sarah, just before we took a short break, Elizabeth was explaining that the growth of the number of women in rural jails is explosive, 31 times what it was in the 1970s. Why that difference between urban and rural areas?
What I think we see in all parts of the criminal justice system is that there is a real incentive for governments, for local governments, or even private companies to make money by locking people up. And we see this in particular in rural areas of the state where say the only industry is a highway running through it. You're going to see a lot of low-level arrests, a lot of low-level offenses for things like traffic violations, and then people who can't afford to pay them fall into the same kind of cycle and trap that we've been talking about today. And we see a lot of that in rural Georgia in particular.
So I want to play this comment from Adria Welcher, who's a sociologist at Morehouse, and she says it's a mistake to think that the rising number of women in jail is a cultural problem.
It's much more of a structural issue where we have not provided ample opportunity in terms of education and employment for families to truly be able to sustain themselves. And so that's why we see these lower level crimes, you know, breaking and entering, you know, petty theft, drug offenses, because on the one hand, folks are trying to find ways to make money to support their family. And on the other hand, folks are trying to find coping mechanisms to deal with the environment into which they are thrust.
So, Priscilla, how does that jibe with the people that you help now, the women especially? Are many of them like you going in for very minor offenses or tickets?
Yes, a lot of women are going in for minor offenses. I've met individuals that have spit on the sidewalk, gotten a ticket, couldn't pay. I've met people that, you know, lost their job, became unemployed, might have been living in their cars. An officer kind of saw that. They got arrested. I've met women that have gone in grocery stores and had to steal food to feed their children and got arrested. I mean, the situation that is addressing low-income people throughout the country, not just in Georgia, based on the fact the lack of employment. If you do get employed, and I'll use myself as an example, when I before I went to jail, I had a pretty decent job. After I came home, it was a problem finding a job because people just look at the fact when they do a background that it says you've been arrested, and they no longer even have concern as far as even going over your application. I've seen cases where my application was thrown in the garbage. Now, it's not that I don't have skills. It's the fact that I got locked up. They're not curious as to what it was. And even, you know, because you're taught, oh, well, if you go and you share the idea, when you say that you've been locked up, people automatically assume that you're a criminal. So your character no longer holds value, the lack of respect that you're shown. And then if you do find individuals that are willing to help, I'll give you an example. I did find some jobs, but they wanted to underpay me, like $7.25. Let's be for real. I'm a single mother with six children. Everybody's in school. Who can live off of $7.25? You can't even pay rent off of $7.25. Then they want to underpay you, overwork you, so you'll get a job and they'll give you some pay, but then you're working, you know, a 40-hour work schedule for
very little.
Yes.
So, Elizabeth, how is this different? We've talked about the fact that some of the resources inside the jail are not designed for females. But how is the impact of jail, how does that differ from between genders?
Well, one point is that nearly 80% of women in jail are mothers, and most of them are single mothers. So when they are incarcerated, as Priscilla has touched on, not only is there great parental stress on them, but that creates stress on their family as well. Any income that they might have had is discontinued. Visiting is incredibly difficult. It's often through a glass partition. It can be prohibitively expensive just to get to the jail. There are a lot of rules. It's loud. That can be really traumatizing for kids. And in some cases, you can't even be in the same room as your loved one. You have to see that person through video. And even calling can be prohibitively expensive because there are surcharges. So this really leaves families even worse off than they were before their mother was incarcerated.
Sarah, I'm going to play this comment. Again, Bethany Kotler was interviewed by our producer, Linda Chen. She's the founder and program director of the Atlanta nonprofit Motherhood Behind Bars. And she's talking about trying to rehabilitate someone, even if they've had a short jail sentence, and how difficult that is.
We don't realize how much of our sense of self goes into being in our community where people know us, being around our children, being that mother figure. So being incarcerated, you all wear the same clothes, you're with strangers, you actually get a number that you're referred to. Often people don't use your first name, they use last names instead. So you can, I think, get really stripped of your identity.
What are the challenges involved in helping a mother who's come out? If you're low income and have kids, that's hard enough. What are the added challenges if they've spent time behind bars?
Well, for any person, the risks increase dramatically spending even just 2 days in jail as opposed to being released within 24 hours of arrest. All the sorts of problems that you face coming, reentering your community are just exponentially grown.
Just with that extra 24 hours?
Just with that extra 24 hours. And what we see, just to make it hyper-local, here at the Fulton County Jail in Atlanta, there's an average of 200 women locked up there on any given day. They are brought not in the main facility, but to the South Fulton Annex, which has, even though the Fulton County Jail has been lauded for some of their great programs for the male inmates, things like the dog training program, a culinary training program, none of these things are available to the women who are incarcerated there. In fact, I believe at the current time, there isn't even a kitchen at the facility where the women are staying, and that the meals have to be brought over from the Rice Street location to the South Fulton Annex for the women. Women who need medical care are up against all sorts of barriers in trying to reach that here in Atlanta. And that doesn't even take into consideration the women who are pregnant or who are soon to give birth, which there are 7 or 8 of those at any time in the Fulton County Jail. So there's the problems that a woman faces from reentering to getting the health care that she needs to getting the kind of training or positive reinforcement that will help her upon reentering reentering our community, it's just dramatically different, and the availability is dramatically decreased.
We would love to get your thoughts on this particular issue, whether it's something that you have experienced yourself or have an opinion on. We want to hear it. You can tweet us at OST Talk or join the conversation on Facebook. You just heard the voice of Sarah Totonchi, who is joining us. We're talking this whole time about women in jail and why the population of women behind bars has increased so much faster than men since the 1970s. Sarah Totonchi is the executive director of the Southern Center for Human Rights. Priscilla Fennell is a now with Women on the Rise. It's from the Racial Justice Action Center here in Atlanta. And Elizabeth Swavola is a senior program associate at the Vera Institute of Justice and one of the authors of this study. And Elizabeth, I'm not sure I fully understand, especially since we've been talking about policies that may affect all low-income people. So if some of these income-generating policies affect everyone who is low-income, and you have both low-income men and women, why are we seeing the population of women grow so much faster than men?
That's a great question. So part of it is that women are coming to the system more economically disadvantaged than men. So 60% of women lacked full-time employment before their arrest, whereas only 40% of men lacked full-time employment. And overall, nearly half of all single Black and Hispanic women have zero or negative net wealth. So a great example is cash bail. When women are given even low amounts of cash bail, they are not able to post that bail to be able to get out of jail. Then they can lose housing, they can lose any employment they might have had. Treatment can be interrupted, they're separated from their families, so there's a whole host of consequences. And as Sarah said earlier, even just a short stay, 2 to 3 days in jail, can set off that chain reaction.
So Sarah, what do we do about this? How do we prevent so many women from ending up behind bars for a $200 or $300 fine?
Well, you know, as with many things, this is not a simple answer. The criminal justice system has so many different facets that we can't just attack one piece and expect everything to be worked out. We need a combination of reforms to the way that we address arrest situations. Like, for example, in Atlanta, there is a new pre-arrest diversion program that I think will help make a difference.
What is a pre-arrest diversion?
It is a program that instead of taking a person who might otherwise be taken to the jail, it connects them with services and community support to help them through whatever they're going through, with the hope of reducing the likelihood of them winding up in jail in the long run. So that's on the front end, but that doesn't even look at, you know, how many women are being brought to jail because of quote-unquote violating various requirements, things like not paying enough of your fines or fees. And then on the back end, we also need to look at reentry support, things like ban the box and making sure that women have...
Banning the box means on a job application, they cannot include a question asking if you've been incarcerated.
Right, at least at the first blush. You know, you want a prospective hirer to look at the person as a whole person and not just put them in the no pile because they've had this experience. So we need, and there needs to be the same kind of job training that is available inside jails and prisons for men need to be made available for women. And so it's got to be a multifaceted approach. I feel optimistic about it. We've had a multifaceted approach.
Well, our Governor Nathan Deal
that's exactly right.
Very dedicated to reform in our law enforcement system.
And he and his Criminal Justice Reform Council have a really holistic view on this process. Priscilla and I were at their meeting last week, and I think 2017 is going to be one of the biggest years for reform yet, and I have high hopes that it will impact the population of women in our prisons and jails in Georgia.
Priscilla, what step along the way might have been the most effective in preventing you going to jail for a traffic ticket?
I believe the pre-arrest diversion program that the Racial Access Justice Center is Actually, we got passed by City Council on a vote of 13-0. Atlanta City Council, I think, is going to be a powerful initiative. Reason being because it will be an alternative. So it's going to redirect people from the criminal justice system and actually, you know, which I mean by that are the prisons and jails, and actually get them into quality services. A lot of people have mental illness. A lot of people are homeless, lack of employment, lack of proper education. Like now we live in a technological society. A lot of individuals don't even have computers at home. So when you're talking about being able to compete with the average individual, if you don't have access to the resources and the materials needed, then you fall into the cracks. And we all know that instinctively it's survival of the fittest. So when you're put into that type of situation, then anything goes.
Is there a chance that that pre-arrest diversion that you and Sarah have mentioned might be adopted in other cities and other counties in Georgia?
Well, I do know that they have a program that's similar called LEAD that's in Seattle. And to my understanding, because quite a few of my coworkers were able to go there and experience it, the program is really working. I believe the percentage was like 60% of the people have been successful that have actually entered into this program. People, and again, I didn't attend, but my coworkers had shared that people were literally looking for reasons for the police to lock them up, to get into the program. Who do you know wants to get locked up?
Nobody.
Exactly.
Elizabeth, we have a couple minutes left. I wonder to what extent across the country this statistic is being seen as a problem. Is this recognized as a negative trend that municipalities want to reverse?
Certainly. So we're in this moment of local criminal justice reform for several reasons. One is there's the Safety and Justice Challenge, which was a partner in releasing this report, which has encouraged national dialogue around how we overuse jails in this country. The other factor is that many jails are becoming overcrowded, and policymakers are going out to their communities and asking for taxpayer dollars to build new, bigger jails, and communities are saying no. So those policymakers are left to find alternatives. Unfortunately, even in this moment of reform, women are still being left out of the conversation. Again, probably because they are a smaller percentage of the total jail population. And that's why it's incumbent as we move into reform that we're looking at the data and we're having a specific lens on women and seeing why are they coming into jail, why are they staying there, and are we offering them opportunities at every point along the spectrum to be diverted away from the system and then supporting them while they're in the community.
Sarah, we have about 30 seconds left. Is this conversation already happening in Georgia?
I think we have to really start this conversation in Georgia. In fact, in preparation for today, I went to even find stats on Georgia women in Georgia jails.
Yeah.
And the Georgia Department of Community Affairs that actually tracks this wrote back to me and said, we don't track gender. This is outrageous. At the very least, we need to start looking at the numbers of women who are incarcerated in Georgia jails on a daily and monthly and annual basis. Until we even have that information, I think we have a long way to go.
That's Sarah Tatonci, Executive Director of the Southern Center for Human Rights. We also spoke with Elizabeth Swavola, Senior Program Associate at the Vere Institute of Justice. And Priscilla Fennell is an organizer for Women on the Rise, a project from the Racial Justice Action Center in Atlanta. Thanks so much to all three of you.
Thank you
so
much.
You.